Thank you, everyone, for standing by. This is the operator, and I just need to inform all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'd like to introduce your host for today's call. We have Ms. Glenda St. Jerry. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you. Maggie, do you want me to do a roll call?
Yeah, let's do a roll call really quickly. I don't think it'll take long, and I think folks will find it helpful to know who's on the call, so go ahead.
Okay. On the call, we have Baudouin Chambi, Raslam Sapero, Steve Pinkos, Avery Doria, Paul Diaz, Catherine Olma, John Nevitt, Vladimir Shadinov, Richard Tindall, Yatko Ruska, Krista Papak, Michele Nilon, Tiro Nostella, I think your name has been misspelled, Scott Austin, Sutton Hammock, Jeffrey Eckhouse, Faisal Shaw, Milton Mueller, Alan Greenberg, Roberto Gaetano, Kathy Kleinman, Michael Palage, Stefan van Gelder, Christina Rosette, Tim Ruiz, Jean-Christophe Vigna, Ron Andruff, Christina Ullman, Nacho Amados, Barry Cobb, and I think that's all. For staff, we have Margie Malam, Amy Satos, Glenda St. Jerry, and have I missed anyone?
Liz Gaster. Dan Halloran is here. Hi, Glenn.
Hi.
And Liz.
And Liz Gaster, sorry. Over to you, Mikey.
Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, all. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the 11th of April VI call.
12th.
12th?
Oh, yes.
Thanks. 12th of April, and I apologize for such a tight agenda. I hope not to do this again, so this is going to push along fairly quickly. And Roberto, stand by. I'm on a cell phone with a laptop balanced on my lap on holiday, so if I suddenly drop off the call, you may have to pick up the slack for me. Just a reminder, given the number of people that are on the call, to be especially conscious of muting your phones today, and off we go. Is there any heartburn over the agenda? This would be the time to change it, and also if people have any other business, this would be the time to let me know. But we do have an awfully tight agenda, so unless it's really earth-shatteringly important, I'd like to hold any other business to a minimum this time.
Question on Aubrey.
Sure.
Go ahead, Aubrey. Is the Adobe working right? I can't seem to get in it.
It's okay for me.
Okay, so then it's just me. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Aubrey. Anything, anybody else? Okay, I'm going to dive right in. One of the things that I want to commend everybody on is fabulous conversation about proposals. You know, an amazingly productive conversation on the list. Devil take the hindmost on this one. This is very fast moving and a very busy list, but I think one of the best conversations. Again, a reminder, everybody, to be on mute. We had somebody cough just there. That'd be good to mute your phones. Anyway, there's another half to this that I think we need to get kicked off today, and I just want to spend about 10 minutes until about 20 after the hour talking about it and imploring you to, especially those of you who've been quiet on the list and quiet on the phone calls, to think about joining this team. And that's a team that works with proposers so that as we go through this process, this sort of self-documenting process, at the end, we have sort of a similar framework by which we can evaluate the proposals against each other and also against our needs. And so on the Adobe in front of you is that little slide deck that I sent. And if you can see that, great. And if you can't, it's back a ways in the mail list. Maybe somebody could resend it to the list real quick just to bring it to the top of the stack. I want to go to the second page of that, and I think everybody has control of this for themselves. Is that right, Margie, or am I controlling it?
That's right. Everyone can scroll it.
Okay. So the next page is, what is the goal of a proposal? And I just want to remind us that these proposals are really going through sort of a little gauntlet. They're starting with us, and we're really the consensus-based development group that hopefully will boil forward one or several really good proposals. They'll then bubble up to the GMSO Council, which is less consensus-based and more representational for approval. It will probably eventually see some time in front of the GAC as well. And eventually the real goal is to get these proposals approved by the board and worked into the day. So that's just a repeat. The next page, the portfolio page, is saying that there are really two dimensions to this. And this is really just a consensus reminder that says, yes, indeed, we want proposals with lots of support, but we also want proposals with not much dispersion. So let's imagine that we had a proposal that had a lot of support, but it had a lot of dispersion as well. In other words, a group of people who, even a fairly small group of people, who were very uncomfortable with it. We would then not have consensus. We would have a lot of support, but the tyranny of the majority would still be in place. And that's not a desirable outcome for us. So what we want is many supporters, but we also want low dispersion or consensus. And that's really the goal of the proposal stuff, but also this notion that we're introducing today. So if you go on to the next page, which is titled Roles, you'll see that there are really four equally important roles, and they're arrayed on the page with no particular intent to imply goodness or badness. It's just that there wasn't room on the page to have them all in the same place. We've got proponents of proposals, folks like the Jays and the MMAs and Kathy and Phil Buckingham. If you're on the call, I may have shortchanged you. We'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, there are folks who are the proponents of proposals. There are folks who support them. There are folks who oppose a proposal, and that's not a bad thing. It's just part of the deal. And then the notion that we're introducing today is that there are also folks who help evaluate. And what we're really trying to get to, I think, is a place where we're all proponents of the proposal, so that as we march forward into the subsequent rounds of discussion with the GNSO and the GAC and the board, we will essentially have a group of people from across the stakeholder groups, inside and outside the GNSO, who are all proponents of these proposals. And the reason that they will have become proponents is because the objections got flushed out in our group, on our list mostly. They got met, they got answered. We did a good job of evaluating. As we evaluated, we found more things that we needed to hammer on. And eventually we get to the point where we come as close as we possibly can to a group of people that all support a proposal, and we carry them forward. Stefan, you have your hand up. Why don't you go ahead?
Thanks, Mikey. Just to clarify one thing, you've mentioned twice that the GAC would be consulted on this as well. That's not part of the process in terms of direct consultation. They would. This is a working group that will come back with a recommendation to the council. That will be either ratified or not by the GNSO Council as a PDP, and that will go to the board directly then. The GAC has representation on the board, but it wouldn't be a proposal that would need to be vetted by the GAC directly, independently of the rest of the process. Just a clarification.
Yeah, good. Good clarification. Let me run through this little queue that's building, and then we'll carry on. Aubrey, you're next.
Yes, I had two questions. I mean, two comments. One of them came as I was listening to Stefan. While it is true that there is no step that requires rejecting by the GAC, A, we do have some GAC-related participants, and B, it's to be hoped that they would vet and talk to us while we were doing it, so we wouldn't end up all coming to consensus with something and at the end of the day have them say, but no, this cannot be. The other thing that I was going to bring up is, as part of the mechanism for achieving this consensus, one of the things we might want to consider having is each of these proposals in its changing format easily available on the wiki, so that it's really easy to go back, so that when I hear someone say, well, isn't this your proposal just like that one except for A, B, and C, be able to get a quick reference as opposed to having to thumb through email trying to figure out what the latest version of the proposal from X is. Thanks.
Absolutely. In fact, if I can save that one for the next little chunk of lengthy process stuff which is coming up, one of the things that I would want to point out there is that what we'd like to do is get into a cycle where once a week some things start to happen. And one of the once a week things that we'd like to see happen is the latest version of each proposal getting posted to the wiki, so that we can A, see the progress as it gets refined, but B, also have a quick and easy place to go look at the current version. And so, you know, I give that a big thumbs up for sure. Michael, go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike Palage. Just to provide a little further clarification to the statements that Stefan and Aubrey made, which I both support, during the ICAM board GAC working group session that was, I think, held on Sunday in Nairobi, there was a specific, there was a consensus among the participants that getting GAC involved earlier in the policy development process would probably be more constructive to prevent finding out concerns later in the process. So, again, I agree with Stefan's statement about the GAC's role, but I also think Aubrey's point about trying to identify potential potholes sooner as opposed to later would it be in everybody's best interest. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, folks, for the comments. I couldn't agree more. I'm going to push along here. I'm now going to go to the page that's called Evaluation, quote, Track, unquote. And this is as defined as I've gotten it. I debated about how prescriptive to get about this and decided I would not get real prescriptive, because what I'd like to see is a group of folks form and do some inventing on their own. But there are sort of three major things that need to get done in addition to what the proposal proponents are doing. And that is, we need to come to a set of definitions. You know, there's been a fair amount of discussion about some of the definitions on the list. We need to nail those down. And then we need to understand how the proposals, if they differ from those definitions at all, we need to understand in what way they want to differ. So that's one component of the process. Another is that the MMA team and Barry started coming up with a pretty neat list of use cases, and what would be, I think, useful about that would be to have, I don't think we need to come up with an exhaustive list, you know, 100 use cases, but it would be good to come up with a complete list that then could be in a form where a proposal proponent could say, okay, these 6 use cases would be included in our proposal and these remaining ones would not, so that we could compare proposals against essentially a matrix of use cases. And then the final chunks that we need to build is similarly a set of criteria by which we want to evaluate the proposals. and then a mechanism to track essentially our results of that analysis. And beyond that, I don't have a huge, I started inventing a prescriptive thing and decided I would rather leave that to the group that's forming. So going to the last page, page six, here's the little process that's in front of us. We right now have a pretty active but very small minority of folks on the list who are proposal proponents. We need to broaden the participation to include those of you who are not as vocal. And I thought that this group might be a way to do that. So we need some of you to volunteer. And that's sort of the first step. I don't want to do it on the call. That's going to take way too long. But those of you who would like to participate in this process, please volunteer to the list. If anybody would sort of like to be a sub-team leader, indicate that as well. This, I think, is going to be a pretty substantial amount of work. And just like everything else in this working group, it's going to have to happen fairly fast. So hopefully within the next few days, we will have a group of people formed who can then do some things really quickly. One of the things that needs to happen is we need to gather up what we've already got. We have definitions from various places, both on the list and from the staff in our charter. We have use cases that some of us have already developed. We have criteria that have been talked about. There's just a gathering exercise that needs to take place, and this needs to be put in sort of an orderly pile so that we can all look at it and review it and understand it and fix it. The next part is the fixing part. Is that enough? Do we need to revise them? Do we agree, et cetera? Again, that needs to happen pretty quickly. And a preliminary draft get put together. And then the bulk of the work and the ongoing work of this group will be to assist proponents with folding these lists and into their proposals and essentially documenting how the proposals align with these three pieces of information. Roberto and I were talking on our other call and saying that we're already producing a fantastic, and I mean this in the most positive way, a fantastic amount of information that we need to document as efficiently as we can. There's no way that we can possibly go through all of the posts on the list and analyze them after the fact. We have to have some sort of self-documenting process in place. And so this last step is really, I think, the most engaging and the most important, so that basically at any point in time, if somebody came and asked us, where are you at? Just like Avery mentioned earlier, we could point to the wiki and say, here's where we're at. We have this list of proposals. We have them evaluated against these criteria, these use cases, these definitions. And this, at this moment in time, is a snapshot of where we are. And sort of like a hologram in reverse, hopefully the focus on this will grow clearer and clearer and clearer as the weeks go by. But almost immediately, we should start to see the outline of where we are and have this be essentially a self-documenting process. I've already run just a little bit over my time, and I apologize for that. Again, this is just a terrifically tight schedule, but this is the time to cry out and say, Dad, no, this is terrible. If people are comfortable with this, I'd like to just end it now and encourage people, especially those of you who are not proposal proponents, to jump on the list and volunteer to participate in this. I have not been following the chat, so if there's anything that's coming up here that people want to bring forward, this would be a good time. But if we're okay, at least in general, I'll try to draw a line on this and move on to the next chunk. I think this is what I call close enough for government work. So I'm going to move on. Margie, could you bring up the next little slide deck that I sent off to the list, the one that talks about sort of the approach?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you. And I, again, apologize to all on the call for my slightly lame behavior. I'm on holiday, and I'm doing this on my lap and on a cell phone. So if I just completely fall off the edge, and I'm here with
you. Is this one? Mikey, is this the right one?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thanks. If we go to the second page of this one, which is the one that's called Approach, the reason I wanted to sort of slide right into this is because I've already sort of started talking about it. The idea here is that, especially given how short our time is, rather than doing sort of a waterfall approach, which in a way is the way that a PDP is normally structured, we wanted to try an iterative approach. And we're already well underway. We've got proposals that are out. We've got two more to listen to today, at least, maybe more. And to the extent that we can get those out there and start iterating on them, we sort of leap ahead in being able to respond to some of the time pressures that we're under. Another component of this is this idea that in addition to sort of the weekly update of the wiki, and you'll see in a minute that my hope is that the proposal proponents will do that on Thursday. And then Mike Zipke and I need to invent this. Every Friday, what we would do is some sort of poll across the whole working group just to get a sense of where we're at on consensus. The hope being that as the weeks progress, we will step incrementally closer and closer to consensus. An important point that I wanted to raise here is that there is no such thing as something that is gone. It's either in the proposals or out of the proposals because we agree that it should either be in or out. Or if we don't agree, if we can't get to consensus on a given issue, we'll defer it. Remember that we're in sort of a two-pass cycle here where we have a very short-term one, and then we have a longer-term one where if we find issues that we simply cannot get to consensus on, that doesn't mean we don't address them. It means that we defer them for that subsequent task, the hope being that, to the extent we can get everything in. The last bullet is I put a little Google Calendar together. It's public, and I did a compressed URL on my own website. My site promptly crashed. And so, Margie or someone on the staff, if we could get an ICANN URL set up, I can send you the full mouthful for the Google Calendar. But it's a monster, and I didn't want to post that to this little slide deck. So I put it on my own server, and it promptly crashed. If we could get an ICANN URL out there, that would be great. Tim, I saw your hand come up.
Yeah, Mikey, I'm just trying to. I might have missed something because I took the weekend or actually a few days off, and so I've got I'm trying to go through at the same time I'm talking. I'm trying to listen to you, but I guess I'm a little confused about what the evaluation team does, and then you talked about continuously polling for consensus. Is that just with some volunteers on the evaluation team are going to determine consensus, or Is it the holding of the entire group? And if it's the entire group, then what is the evaluation team doing exactly again?
Well, I'm viewing the evaluation team more as a structural team than a content team. I think eventually what we get to is to say, here's the framework by which we evaluate. We have all these criteria. We have all of these use cases. We have all of these definitions. And it's up to the evaluation team to make sure that that stuff is tidy. So that then the proposal proponent types can make sure that their proposals address all of those now tidy components, and that we all participate, except for the chair, in the polling every week, so that we get a sense of where the whole group is at around that, and that the evaluation component is to assist us all in understanding what these proposals mean and so forth. Does that clarify? That's a great question, and I want to make sure that it's clear. So does that help?
I guess a little. I'm still...
I mean, this is we're sort of inventing this as we go. And you know, I think that one or two turns of the crank will make it A, clearer, and B, may identify some things that need to get fixed along the way. Because you know, we are moving this along on an awfully abbreviated schedule, and so my thought was that, like many rapid development projects, it's better to get something out there quickly and fix it rather than have it absolutely perfectly designed before we go with it. And so, again, you know, I think with this evaluation team notion, it's going to be the same sort of thing as with the proposals, where we'll throw it out there and then people will go, wait a minute, that's not right. And then we'll fix it, just as we fix the proposals, and hopefully in a couple of weeks we'll be at a place where we'll say, okay, these are the criteria, these are the use cases, these are the definitions, this is how the proposals match up with those, and these are the places where we have consensus and these are the places that we don't. And that last bit is really the interesting bit. Where do we not have consensus, and where can we work to get consensus on those places that we don't? And all of the rest of this is really tool to bring a lens on those issues, you know, bring them into sharp focus and determine whether we can get to consensus about it. And so this evaluation team, I think, is a team that helps clarify that for folks. Roberto, go ahead.
Yes, I'm just wondering whether since we are going at a fast pace, and I recognize that this proposal has been dropped on the working group during the call without a lot of preparation, and we're getting also short of time. Maybe I think that we could discuss the proposal on the mailing list, you know, and get more formalized things instead of continuing spending time on this call.
I agree. I think that's probably right. We are, you know, running late. Let me quickly zip through the rest of this. One of the things that came up on the list, I'm now on the next page of the slide deck, was, you know, what's our plan? You know, we don't really have a plan. And I wanted to just give you a sense that indeed we do have a plan. The picture on page 3 is a thinned out version of one that you saw before that says, look, one of our big fence posts is to get a snapshot of where we're at in time for Brussels so that the JNSO Council can see it and ask questions about it, so that the board can, you know, we won't have a formal slot on the board agenda, but maybe in hallway conversations we can talk to folks, or maybe there's an informal way to have a conversation with the board. But, you know, we really have to do the bulk of our work, I think, you know, at least the broad strokes done by Brussels. And so what I did is I put together a schedule, and I am consciously using the word I rather than we on this, that drives us pretty hard towards sort of a mid-May deadline, but then leaves us some slack so that if we just find that we can't, you know, if we find things that we still need to work out and we just run out of time, we effectively have some slack in our schedule before we get to Brussels. We don't have any formal deliverable to do by Brussels, but informally, it would be lovely to be able to get to a pretty clear picture of where we're at by mid-May. And one of the reasons for that is because mid-May is the deadline for input into the next iteration of the DAG. And if we can arrive at a fairly clear picture of where we think we're headed, we might be able to influence even that deadline, although that's extremely aggressive. And I'm not putting that on the schedule that way. The next picture is just the same sort of thing. Page 4 is just after Brussels, and that's where the formal deliverables show up: the council approval, the review between the council approval and the board approval, all that good stuff. And then the last page is. The second to the last page is the milestone date, which also show up in that little calendar, and the last page is this notion of some weekly activities, the vote and or the polling for consensus and the updates to the repository. So, just a quick snapshot for those who were saying, you know, which way is west? This is west at this point. And again, we can have a chat about it on the list. You know, et cetera. I think I want to draw a line under this unless there's just a terrible screaming problem, and I'm more than happy to carry on the conversation on the list. All right. Amy and Margie have about 10 minutes that they'd like to spend with us. This is a holdover item from the very first agenda of our very first call, just to give us a sense of some of the antitrust issues that are relevant to our conversation. And with that, I'm going to let you take it away, Amy and Margie, and we'll shoot for 10 minutes to the hour to get done with this, and that's what I've got. Thanks, folks.
Great. Thanks, Mikey. This is Amy. And understanding all of the references to the short amount of time we have, I don't even think we need to take 10 minutes. Margie sent the, it's just a one-page kind of a primer around this morning. Just as a caveat, as it says in the first paragraph of the primer, as I am the company's counsel, that I'm not acting as counsel, and this is not meant to be legal advice. Just a few items of things for the folks on the call to think about as they're going through their discussions. Most of the registrars and registry reps have heard me say this on more than on occasion or two, so I don't really need to make a presentation. You know, it really goes through in the penultimate paragraph, just kind of talks about a few things that people should be cognizant of when they're talking through these things, when there are competitors on the phone with them. And I think it's pretty straightforward. Margie, do you have anything to add?
No, perhaps you would just open it up for questions if anyone has questions on the memo.
I'll take a few. Oh, boy. Oh, Alan. Go ahead, Alan, and then Michael.
Okay. I was rather both perturbed and intrigued to read, "Please note that I can counsel is not counsel for this work group and should not be considered as legal advice," For specific legal advice regarding antitrust and competition laws, please consult your own legal counsel. This is an ICANN work group, and some of us on the call do not retain our own antitrust legal advice and legal counsel. Either something has to be clarified, or we need a budget to retain legal counsel for the working group.
Amy, Martin, any thoughts there? Amy or Margie, you might be on mute if you're talking.
But this is Liz. I'm going to actually jump in and while Amy, queues up. This has been a longstanding approach to policy work ever since I've been at ICANN, that the ICANN Council does act on behalf of ICANN and interprets and guides us in terms of their role as counsel to the company, to the organization. Most of the issues that we deal with don't require per se legal guidance for individuals or from individuals. We're talking about policy issues for the most part. Here we have a situation where there's the potential for the antitrust issues to arise, and so we're providing general information for the collective group, but I think it's just intended as that, and it's not that we're recommending that anyone seek personal counsel, unless you have more questions or concerns about the subject matter where you feel you need personal advice. I wouldn't attribute additional significance to that statement, that other than how we've always operated in terms of that counsel's there to support, ICANN, and to provide interpretations were helpful on, ICANN's documents and such, but they're not providing legal advice broadly to the community, where we recognize that the community itself has broad and divergent interests in any particular matter from a, more legal perspective.
Alan, is your hand up to follow up? If it is, why don't you go ahead and do that, and then we'll go to Michael and Aubrey.
Well, I guess I admit confusion. I think I've participated in working groups before where the working group explicitly asked for a legal opinion on something that may well have been on an interpretation of an ICANN document, but I think it was typically more general than that. And I just question if this working group is not part of ICANN and we have serious concerns about antitrust, I don't see an alternative but to retain our own counsel who will put up his hand and say, be quiet, you just violated the rules. If ICANN counsel can't do that.
Why don't we
put my hand down.
Do one more response on that, and then we'll draw a line on it, and if we need to, take
sure.
it.
Sure. And this is Amy again. And just to clarify, I think one of the key factors here is that, that ICANN counsel is not giving advice to individual participants on the working group. I know some people may or may not have antitrust counsel. Many, many do. And I think Liz stated it pretty well in the fact that this is something that's regular occurrence, and that as long as certainly I've been here, is that the representation is for the organization. And we are here, obviously, to provide some information as a benefit to the working group itself.
Okay. Thanks, Amy. Michael, go ahead.
Mike Pelage here. I guess a couple of questions. And, again, I think Alan does raise a good point. I mean, with Amy and Dan, we have several hundreds of thousands of dollars of ICANN legal talent. Hopefully they would be able to provide some guidance to the group if we were going off a cliff. So, again, I do think Alan does raise some valid points. Amy, one of the questions that I have, in the proposal that Avery, Milton, and I had recently co-authored, we specifically referenced the standard that ICANN uses in the registry, the RCEP process where they will refer matters to national competition authorities. So my question there, would legal counsel be able to provide some further details on the criteria that were developed in connection with that and share that with this group?
You know what, Michael, I apologize. I haven't had a chance to look at your proposal in detail, and I certainly can do that. And then,
question is, and again, you don't need to read.
Hello?
Existing.
Michael, you dropped off there.
I'm sorry.
The existing
registry agreements have a provision in there that if there is a new registry service request that raises competition concerns, that ICANN will refer it to a national competition authority. That is in place in 15 GTLDs. There, ICANN has processed over 20 or 30 registry funnel requests over the last 5 years. So I think the team as well as the group would find beneficial is what are the criteria that ICANN are using as part of the RCEP in deciding whether to refer something to a national competition authority.
Look, hey, Michael, if you want to put that in writing, we'll certainly take a look at it and try and look to see how we can respond to that.
This is Liz. I would like to just jump in on if you have further questions for substantive questions for legal in general, like Mike, the one that Mike just posed. We really want to, because there are so many questions coming out of this group, just be sure that we identify the questions that are actually the questions that the group is asking and track them so we don't lose them. So I just really want to echo what Amy's saying for all these questions that are coming out that are substantive for staff that we already kind of asked Roberto and Mike O'Connor to help us a little as staff. Keep track of these, we know, and also just make sure that these are questions coming out of the whole group and not, in addition, individual questions. Not that I'm implying yours is at all, Mike, but just as a general matter. So if you can have the help of the group on, if you have questions like that on the call, just help us follow up in the chat or in email and confirm that, you know, these are in the context of how they're relating to the group here. So we're just keeping track of the ones that the group and trying to respond to the ones that the group is posing to us.
Mike, I'm going to cut in. Michael, why don't you take that one to the list for the and I'll give it the imprimatur of the chair that, you know, will consider this a question of the group because I think we do need to know that. But I kind of want to push things along, if that's okay.
Just one other final question, and I did put this on the list, so it's there, and it has been discussed by other group members. There are at least, I think, 3 to 5 that have already specifically raised the criteria, so I think that does meet it. One final follow-up, again, Amy, in the context of what ICANN's position here. In the Cray report, in one of the appendices, they talked about monopolies and bottleneck facilities. The fact that ICANN has a monopoly over what TLDs go into the route, does ICANN have a position on what liability it might have as a sort of a controller of that essential bottleneck facility in the process that we're undertaking? And I will leave it at that, and if you could put that in writing or a response, that would be nice.
Michael, why don't you put that one to the list as well, and then we'll... You know, this is part of that self-documenting thing, so that we can push that along to the staff for comment as well. Aubrey?
Yeah, mine, I think, is specific and related to the notes. It has been my experience, both in ICANN and other industry-type groups that have similar-type provisions about anti-competitive behavior, that the staff and the legal counsel perhaps are not counseling us on those things, but they certainly can be counted on to raise the alarm flag anytime they perceive something that deserves an alarm flag and aren't just sort of sitting there passively sort of saying, well, you know, if you blow it, the courts will get you later, folks.
And so I would kind of expect that same level of service of pulling an alert, especially for those of us that don't have a corporate counsel, aren't corporate entities, are just participants in the group, are non-commercial, are not corporate, and who don't want to be responsible for accidentally leading any competitor into temptation.
Thanks, Ivory. I tend to agree. Can we count on the staff for that? If we're just running off the cliff, that somebody will stick their hand up and say, hey, folks, you're getting close to the edge. Liz or Amy or somebody?
I think that
gets to Alan's point as well.
So, Mikey, just the last point. I mean, we'll certainly think about what level of support as legal counsel we could look at to providing to the group, but it is difficult, the fact that we are not actually the group's counsel and we're not counsel for any of the individual participants. But we'll certainly look at that and try to get back to you with some more focused understanding of that.
I just think it's Liz. I just think from our perspective there's going to be a limit where, we're not a trade association. We're unique. We are providing limited guidance and support in areas where we can. And we'll get back to you, of course. But there is a limit here.
Yep. Thanks, Liz.
And on the questions too, I really want to make sure that the questions that we respond to and that you're expecting us to respond to as a group are questions of the group. And that just going through the group as a funnel to ask any and all questions of staff related to this trade association. I know it sounds like I'm being very hard-nosed, and I don't mean to be, but I just want to make sure we're looking for the chairs and the group to help us respond on the things that are most important for you to respond to. And it's not a value judgment issue. It's a resource issue, and it's a way of tracking things to make sure we are able to respond. So I thank you for that.
Okay. I'm going to draw a line under this. Michael, I assume your hand's up from before. And I want to get on to the two proposals that I – is Phil Buckingham on the call?
Yeah.
If you are, Phil. Did you want to present your proposal today? And if so, would it be all right if I deferred you to next week?
Can you hear me? Mikey.
There we go. Yep.
Mikey. Hi, Mikey. Yeah, I just said to Margie that I didn't want to do a proposal. I didn't want to speak about it. Basically, wanted everybody to read it and obviously discuss it. And if they think it's a good idea to go forward, then obviously supply the information that I asked individually from everybody.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Why don't we carry that discussion on the list? And if it turns out that folks want to carry forward with that, we'll put you on the agenda for next week to talk about it, and you can develop a little bit more formal set of material. All right. We are now at 5 minutes to the hour. Could we do 15 minutes to each proposal, the MMA crowd and Kathy, try and wrap up MMA by somewhere between 10 and 15 minutes after the hour. Kathy, by about 25 after the hour, we'll spend just a few minutes talking about the signal registrant question, and we'll defer the face-to-face meeting to the list. How about that for a little agenda compression? So with that, MMA, who's your spokesperson? And Margie, if you could get their material up on the Adobe, we'll go.
This is Mike. I mean, what I'll do is I'll go through and try to plow through it rather quickly, although there may be some aspects where Milton and Avery may like to perhaps contribute. So starting with the proposal, since we're short on time, the first aspect in our proposal deals with the issue of co-ownership. And what we are proposing is to allow registry operators or registrars to own 15% of an affiliated registrar or registry. This is very similar to, I believe, the proposal that John Nevitt had originally proposed last week, with the ability of that entity to require a waiver to acquire greater than the 15% share. What we proposed here is twofold. Is one, that if you currently have more than 40% market share, you would be barred from the first round from increasing your ownership in one of these affiliated entities beyond 15%. But if you read the footnote number 3, we had a lot of concern about this, and we're wavering about withdrawing this from the proposal. And if you read the emails on the list, I think we try to provide some details about the concerns of false negatives. It's our view, however, that since there are not a lot of people that would be potentially running up against that 40% market share in the current environment, that the majority of the applications or requests to exceed 15% would be submitted to ICANN. ICANN would start a 30-day public forum. At the end of that 30-day public forum, those comments, with no editorial comment from ICANN staff, would be bundled and would be forwarded to the appropriate competition authority. And again, this was part of the previous question that I had asked Amy about ICANN's experience with the funnel request. What would happen after the submission to the competition authority would be that there would be a 45-day review period. And this is one of the concepts that was actually incorporated from the Salop and Wright proposal, ICANN's economist experts, that would provide that competition authority 45 days to review the application. Most competition authorities, from our limited understanding, do not give approvals of these types of deals. In fact, they don't give green lights, they give red lights, showing that they have potential enforcement concerns. So if there were no enforcement concerns after that initial 45-day period, the application would proceed to be approved by ICANN. If that competition authority raised some concerns, there would be a delay, and the timing of that delay would be based upon the period of time that that agency would need to conduct its investigation. The timing element we're looking at right now is 60 days after that agency had requested or had received the last document request from the company. And again, as detailed in one of the emails to the list earlier today, that timing is based upon some of the practices that are currently used by the U.S. Department of Justice in connection with reviewing potential mergers and acquisitions. So that is the concept with regard to co-ownership. We believe the pros are that we try to create a level playing field and provide a framework that scales not only going forward but also retroactively. The only potential con is, while we think we could potentially reach agreement on this framework by Brussels, drafting the exact legal documents and terms would potentially take a little longer. What I'd like to do now is to stop there and perhaps answer any questions on that particular aspect, one or two, if there are any from the group.
Michael, why don't you go ahead and manage your own queue?
Yep.
Yeah, this is Tim. I'd like in the queue.
Yes, Tim, go, please.
So just to clarify, Michael, if during the application process for new GTLDs, this would apply as well, right? So I'm trying to figure out how it would apply in the application process. And sorry if I missed that, but that's my question.
Sure, and I tried to answer this. I believe I believe I answered this Richard Tindall's question earlier today. And just to touch on it briefly, in theory, if this was to be applied, let's just say we passed a policy and it went into effect September 1. In theory, applying this retroactively, a Neustar affiliate would be able to sit there and apply to be an ICANN accredited registrar, a VeriSign, whatever, would be able to apply to be an ICANN accredited registrar at that time. So that would be the case. Now, in response to the concerns that Jeff Eckhouse had raised during some of my talks with him last week, he was concerned about equity, making sure that someone such as the Demand Media would be able to have certainty when it applied going forth for an application as part of the DAG to ensure that they had smooth sailing. We looked at Avery Milton and I looked at different aspects of that, trying to address it, but we realized that creating another process was really only adding a whole bunch of layers of complication and potentially delaying the process. And when you looked at how this would be applied by national competition authorities, a registry that had zero market share, we struggled to see how that application would potentially be denied, having zero market share when you wanted to use your own registrar. So I think when you look at how this would be applied, Neustar, Demand Media, whether you're a registry that wanted to be a registrar or a registry that wanted to be a registrar, you would actually have equal parity in the upcoming round. That was our intention, and we think we've embodied that in the proposal.
Michael, do you want to keep an eye on the queue and
yep, are people raising their hands in the?
Yeah, you've got a queue in Adobe as well.
Yeah, I just saw that. If we can, Richard, go.
Yeah, it's Richard. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yep. Perfect.
So when is the earliest that someone could put an application in to have more than 15%? We're in the whole sort of process, the application process for TLDs.
I would assume, and again, we have not said when they could apply. If this was to let's just say become policy on October 1st. I don't see why Demand Media could not sit there and say we want to be a registry operator and or, you know, announce their intention to say here's a separate subsidiary. I don't see why that would be blocked, just like Neustar would not be prohibited or affiliates or any other existing registry operator would be prohibited at that time from going to ICANN saying we'd like to become an ICANN accredited registrar. The way we interpreted it, they'd both be able to apply at the same time. From a parity standpoint.
Okay. So if that's before an actual application is submitted, which I think is what you just said, then the competition authority and, in fact, the public comment is going to sort of happen in a bit of a vacuum, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because at that point, there's no data for anyone to comment on. Or am I misunderstanding that?
Yeah.
Correct.
So, you know,
if this is Milton, and I have to get off as soon as I finish, there is a data point. It's how much market share do the applicants have in the existing market? So if you're, Enom, for example, then what do you have, 10% of the registrar market and 0% of the registry market? The competition authority would look at that, I assume, and say, not a problem.
Okay, but we don't even know what the TLD being applied for is at that point, do we?
Yeah.
You know what?
No,
that's the context of market share, I think, would have to be relevant to the actual TLD being applied for. I mean, they might be applying for some very specific TLD for a very specific market, and therefore 10% market share generally in the GTLD market might not be relevant at all. I'm just wondering what sort of information the competition authority is really going to have to make any sort of meaningful judgment, and I'm wondering what sort of data that the public have to make sort of public comments at that early point.
And put it this way, Richard, these are, as I said, constructive data points. And what we might do is perhaps go back to ICANN's own economic experts that have recommended this referral as well, and perhaps get their input on the timing of their proposal. So again, this was not this was something where we were trying to incorporate elements from proposals that were already out there. So
just one more comment from me, Richard. I don't know what you mean when you say there's no market, that your particular selection of a top-level domain string would affect the market that you're in. I have trouble with that. I don't understand how a competition authority would say that if you choose .music, for example, that, and you have 0% of the registry market and 5% of the registrar market, I think they're going to look at you as having a minuscule market share. It doesn't matter whether it's a .music or .food or .sami. I just don't get that.
All right. Unfortunately, with the queue, we're only going to get through one part of the proposal. But John, go ahead.
Thanks. Two quick questions. I don't know if Milton's still on, but first question is some of the other proposals. I guess the Jeff and Jeff proposal and my proposal talked about having a restriction on having more than 15% of a registrar or that operated in the same PLD. Is that the same in yours? In other words, if a registry applied to be or a registrar applied to be a registry, they might be restricted from selling their own TLD, but they could still be an applicant.
So I believe the answer is no, and our approach is we would allow, so again, the one hypothetical I think we used previously was demand media applying for a .web and then electing to use Enom as its registrar in selling that domain names. That would be allowed in this proposal, provided that the safeguards that we have called for later on are there. And the basis of that thinking was when you look at the competition that evolved in the ComNet org space when VeriSign owned both a registry and a registrar, 100% at the time, was in part because of those safeguards that provided a level playing field in the marketplace. So this proposal would not prohibit an ownership. As I said, demand media could use Enom to provide .web registrations. Presumably,
if the safeguards aren't there, then they could still be the registry operator, but they just can't sell it at Enom.
If the safeguards were not there, yes. Safeguards are an important provision. However, in both Jeff Eckhouse as well as Jeff Newman, I believe safeguard proposals were sort of recognized. I didn't see pushback from the use of safeguards to protect the end registrant interest there. All right. Is that both questions? Okay, excellent. Scott, you're next.
Okay, thank you. I want to raise the question that I raised last week. When we use a touchstone like a 15% to determine control, I think that we also need to take into consideration things like your typical control issues in any corporate setting. I mean, that's sort of a traditional stock context, and it can be overridden by things like shareholder agreements, voting trusts, preferred stock versus common stock. My question is 15% of what? Because 15%, if there's a shareholder's agreement that says it requires unanimity for anything to be taken, action to be taken by that registrar, would still be, you'd still have a controlling interest even with much less than 15%.
Scott, that 100% agree, and that point has already been articulated, I think, very accurately by Jeff Newman. And so when we get into the next part of the proposal, which talks about how you would allow an affiliate to provide services, an affiliate registrar to provide services within a registry. The talk of control there is modeled after the language that Jeff Newman has done, I think, and I think he modeled that after the Security and Exchange, how they define.
Yeah, that's what my suggestion would be, the SEC. But okay, so that's one item. The other item, my question was, how is market share defined? And I think there's a lot of different things floating around on the chat, but things like substitutes, you know, if it's dot music and someone else has dot jazz or dot classical or, you know, these genres, is that going to be a trade-off in terms of market share?
Well, and that's actually one of the points that we had raised on some of the email correspondence that I had earlier on the list is those potential complications. I think John and Richard both raised this. Because we did not want to put one of the driving factors of us considering to withdraw that 40% threshold bar was there might be some false negatives that ICANN might interpret without having the expertise, and one of the reasons why we believe are willing to accept the fact that let everything go through to competition authorities may be the better approach. Again, I think the group is open to listening to ideas from the group on that as well. All right. So I think, Kathy, I think you're going to get the last question, and then you'll probably take over because we've exceeded our 15-minute allotment of time. So you get the last question, and then you'll probably take over the presentation.
Great. Can you hear me?
For your proposal. Yes.
Excellent. Great presentation, Mike. And I'm going to jump again a little bit to the next section, which has to do with the monitoring, because maybe you haven't heard much pushback, but there are a lot of people who are very concerned about the safeguards. And that's why, you know, advocates of structural separation, because it creates the ability to not just say that there'll be strict controls on data, on confidential information, on proprietary information as it passes between a registry and a registrar affiliate in the same TLD, but it mandates the separation so that it's not an issue of policing or auditing. So let me ask you, how do you create a system where you have to monitor for all of these things? How are you going to look inside these companies and audit, and how are you going to do it internationally? And I ask that as a former data security auditor, because this is really tough stuff. But thank you.
Well, actually, I would say part of the answer to that is your own proposal, which talks about how not to change things. It now is not a fundamental time for change. So if you go back to 1999, Kathy, the safeguards that were in place to prevent self-dealing, when VeriSign owned 100% of the registry and 100% of the registrar, those safeguards allowed competitions to happen. The reason VeriSign sold off NSI was it was no longer an advantage, right? It was, you know, GoDaddy's, Enom's, these one-on-ones. They were able to sit there and, if you will, flourish in a market that had 100, you know, basically had the registry owning a registrar, but relying upon those compliance. Now, what we've done is, if you go back and you look at, and you talk about how this will be done, VeriSign had to comply with an external audit that was undertaken as an annual audit that it had to pay for. So, as you said, there was I forget whether it was Arthur Anderson, but it was one of the larger accounting firms that came in and undertook this audit. And again, this is something that PIR affiliates, most registries undergo an audit as part of their normal operation. So this would potentially be another aspect that they would have to pay for if they elected to provide within their own TLD. The other data point that I would offer is in 1999, when you looked at the penalties if VeriSign, if NSI somehow violated those self-dealing rules, it was kind of weak. ICANN didn't. There was not a lot of teeth. There was a potential fine if it wasn't corrected. What we're proposing here in our three strikes rule is that if there is a violation, that registrar would be prohibited from providing new registrations for a three-month period of time. On a second violation, they not only would be prohibited from providing new registrations, but actually renewals for a six-month period of time. So the potential penalties here that would be uncovered through the audit that they're paying for through a neutral third party are of, I don't want to say draconian, but are of such a substantial value that there is there's a built-in incentive for that entity to honor those, and thus providing a direct benefit to registrants knowing that these safeguards are in place.
This is Mikey. I'm going to leap in. Michael, you're right. You've kind of run out of time. I think what we'll do is we'll hold the second half or the rest of your proposal over for the next call. For those of you in the chat who are saying, dang nabbit, when are we going to talk about proposals? It's always a balancing act. I promise that we won't have much process stuff next time. It'll be pretty much proposals and content. But Roberto suggested in the chat that we hold the SR discussion and the face-to-face discussion over either to the list or to the next call. I didn't see any howls of protest, so I think that's what we'll do. We'll let Cassie take 15 minutes and take us out till the end of the half hour, and that'll be it for today. Cassie, it's up to you.
Just checking again that I'm off mute.
You're off mute.
Well, terrific. First, everyone, apologies for dropping this in so late, but I wanted to get it in, and we may be fleshing this out over time. You'll see there are already, you know, some typos in here, but it was important to get it into the working group and important to have as many on the table as possible. PIR is trying to add to this, you know, to this very important working group process. We're going to go back to the main model, which is one of full structural separation. I'll talk about it in detail in just a second, but the idea of full structural separation is more than just a percentage of control. This is a complete separation of operational resources, assets, processes, financial systems, and control. In the end, this will create a system of much easier tracking and audit, so that what you have to track and what you have to audit is very narrow. You know, form really follows function, and structure really dictates use. And we point kind of in some of our opening material to the subprime mortgage crisis in the United States, where we heard a lot of cries for innovation, a lot of unwinding of regulation, and yet the results were unintended, unanticipated, and very, very difficult to unwind, and vast, especially against the end users, the consumers, the people who own their houses and lost their houses. So it's a terrible situation, and structural separation and traditional regulation help. We know the system that we've worked with. It's worked very well. It's created, you know, robust, the system that we've had in place for so many years in ICANN has really created robust competition among registrars and really outstanding, you know, an outstanding marketplace. And now we're opening up competition among registries, and we're not sure you have to cross over the line on this. So going into our report, we've got the main model, which is, and you'll see the typo, it's not full structural separation of registries and registries, it's full structural separation of registries and registrars, of course. I've already defined what that separation means, and almost by definition, it's going to be easily verifiable, easily auditable, and that's a big issue when you're talking internationally or when you're talking just in general. Audits are difficult, and I say that as a former data security auditor. The penalties, I agree with Mike here completely. Penalties for violation must be clear, severe, and rapidly implemented, and we're adopting the 15% ownership interest maximum. The exceptions here are the ones, and, you know, you can try to question me on this, but I'll refer back to, you know, the intelligence of the group. The exceptions are the ones we've been talking about for a long time, the single registrant GTLD, the community-based GTLD, and one we're going to call the orphan TLD, TLD that's just not picked up by enough registrars to make a difference to give it a marketplace. But we're going to do something a little different here. Rather than saying that the single registrant GTLD is an absolute, now you own it in perpetuity, we're watching the list of amazing issues have been raised regarding Google and others and what happens. So let's just draw a bright line. Once you hit a certain number, and we posit 50,000, but it's open to discussion, once you hit a certain number of registrations, you switch over. And you have to use ICANN-accredited registrars.
Mm.
Same with community-based GTLDs and the same with the orphan TLDs. This is a process of kind of launching something, and once it gets big enough, the possibilities for gaming are innumerable, so you switch back to the main model.
Well, this is Mikey. Kathy, let me just jump in and remind everybody to mute. Even I'm muted on this call, so remind. We've got some folks who aren't, who are sort of humming along with you, and I just wanted to make it clear that it's not me.
Well, I hope they're humming favorably. Or humming in key. Okay. Now, Section 2 of the proposal entitled Innovative and Efficient Marketing. Hearkening to, say, Jeff Eckhouse's slides on benefits and to others, we want to see access to TLDs. We want to see innovation. We really want to see that ability to reach the registrant. That's the whole purpose of this, right, is opening this up and getting new GTLDs, getting domain names to new communities, to developing countries, to future communities of all sorts, commercial and non-commercial. So we have an idea there, which is to follow the vast majority of the equal access provisions of 1 through 8, everything involving technical equal access, and you'll see that I copied Registry Pro's equivalent access certification, so that we're going to have, we're positing complete equivalent access of connections, of software, of access to registry, customer support, to reconciliation, to all of the material. But one change, that the registrars can come to registries with particular proposals that allow them better to serve their developing countries, their communities, and that registries be able to respond to those proposals and be able to accept targeted marketing proposals. This doesn't change any of the baselines, doesn't change any of the equal access on the technical side, but it will foster an array of competition, some new ideas, some innovation, which but it will foster it across the board so that all registrars can work with all registries on this type of issue, all ICANN-accredited registrars working with the new GTLD registries, and just open up the system much better to innovation across the board, not just in that narrow cross-ownership of a registrar and a registry. So with that, let me throw this out to the group. Thank you.
Okay, I'll manage the queue. Scott, I think is your hand up from last time, or is this a new one for you?
Sorry, it's coming down.
No worries. Michael, I think you're next.
Yeah, what I'll do is, since I've already spoken, let Jeff and Christina speak first. Put me at the back of the queue. I want to give them time.
Okay, that's fine. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yep, here you just fine.
Great. So, Kathy, there was a lot of, I'll just go quickly. There's a lot of fear mentioned in the proposal, and somehow that ties in that security and stability of the Internet will collapse if there's integration of registries and registrars. So I just, I already see that it occurs in many CCTLDs and some GTLDs like .pro, and we haven't seen a total collapse. So one of the things I was missing from the presentation, can you just maybe explain now or after how the security and stability is threatened, like what are the specifics, what is the gaming that will occur that will affect, the whole stability and security of the Internet? I know, it's been thrown around that these things will happen, but I'd like to see if you could discuss some of the specifics and what are the fears, so maybe we could address those, because I always think that it's not always the separation and the structure, but the actions of people that cause the problem. So maybe if you could go through it, it would help me understand it and others. Thanks.
Jeff, it's of course an excellent point, and it comes back to exactly what I was talking about with Mike. has to do with how do you enforce, if you say there are going to be separations, if there are going to be separations of separations and protections of data passing, of confidential data, of registry data, proprietary information, how do you enforce these things? These things give a leg up. They give a preference. They give, it becomes unequal treatment when this information passes, but yet monitoring it, frankly, is almost impossible unless you create the bar of structural separation as well as ownership divisions. That creates a very practical and enforceable and monitorable way to enforce what we all seem to agree, which is that this important proprietary data shouldn't pass between one and the other, that there really should be fair treatment of all registrars by a registry. And yet, if they're co-owned, if there's no structural separation, verifying that, you can put a lot of penalties in, but if you can't figure it out, if you can't find it, or you can only find it under exceptional circumstances, it's almost impossible to say that's going to be the case.
So wait, just one quick response, and then I'll just stop. Is, you know, what I'm still the question is, what happens if that proprietary data is passed along? I know everyone says, you know, bad things will happen, but I don't know, maybe if we could do it, I'm not on this call, but on the list, or what are those bad things, what would happen, and maybe in structures where it exists right now, where that data does get passed, and their registries do sell direct, through, maybe through registrars, why hasn't that happened in those areas where that data is already passed through?
I fully support taking it off to the list, but I think the fundamental answer has to do with fundamental unfairness, but we'll continue on the list. Thanks.
Christina, you're next.
Sure. Thanks, Kathy. Two questions, and I guess I'm just having a hard time getting my mind around this. When you all were putting this together, do you have any examples or hypotheticals as to what you would consider to fall within the efficient marketing exception? And I guess the second question is what's the safeguard that you would propose to essentially prevent the efficient marketing exception from kind of swallowing up the whole rule? And when I say rule, I mean the equal access, equivalent access rule.
Good questions. Examples of efficient marketing, yes. I've heard many of them posed to me, which have to do with really targeting, say, developing countries and trying to get proposals that truly target and reward and incentivize GTLD registration within developing countries where, you know, particularly countries where it's not very high right now, really incentivizing registrars to go into underserved communities, non-commercial communities, and rewarding them for this process. Something I've also heard is that a lot of registrars have very innovative ideas, and they want their businesses to benefit from those innovative ideas without necessarily sharing them with the world. And that this becomes, so we'll, as we see this concept of innovation come up again and again and again in the materials, and we agree with it, this is an alternate way to arrive at that innovation, which we, again, think is far broader and far fairer. In terms of not allowing the efficient marketing concept to swallow up everything else, all the other provisions of equivalent access stay in, as well as the baseline price, and I think this actually creates a more competitive environment, but one that where the rewards really come for those who innovate, but that reward is offered across to every registrar that wants to get involved in it. And just like today, you can't turn down an ICANN accredited registrar who wants to come to you as a registry. You must work with them. And so, you know, it's in no one's interest to allow the exception to swallow up anything. It's in the registry's interest to have the best plans and reach the largest community. So, no, I don't think the exception will swallow it up.
Plays, you're next, but Steve Pinkos is in. You want to let him go first?
Yeah, hey, anybody that hasn't spoken, so Steve could take the floor.
Okay. Steve, you're next.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. And, Kathy, hi. Thanks very much for your proposal and subjecting yourself to the questions today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to hear your voice, Steve.
Good. Thank you. I just have a quick question sort of on the threshold level that you're getting at with Jeff Eckhouse. And I'm trying to wrap my arms around is, you know, fundamentally, what is so different about this marketplace or the domain name marketplace that requires, you know, really what we're talking about here is a deviation from the norms of doing business. You know, usually people are permitted to distribute their own products, you know, absent extraordinary circumstances, absent extraordinary anti-competitive circumstances, monopolistic circumstances. And, you know, talking about the data, you know, and the huge advantages that can be gained from the access to this data, you know, people keep talking about that, but is it really, what's so different in this area than the advantage that Apple can gain from knowing their customer data, or Walmart and selling their own brand versus other people's brands at their store, that would require, you know, again, a deviation from people being permitted to sell their own, you know, product in essence?
This is Mikey. I'm going to jump in. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to ask for 5 minutes. We're going to cut the call off sharp at 35 minutes after the hour. And congratulations to all for a great conversation. So we need to get, my screen just went crazy. We need to get a couple of people in and then drop the call. Kathy, go ahead.
Okay. Steve, you know, great questions, of course. And, you know, the bottom line is I don't have a crystal ball, and neither does anyone else on the call. We do not know what will happen when we unwind these structural separations and the cross-ownership limitations. So we can say that other marketplaces operate like X, but in fact here the structural separations have served our ICANN community very, very well, and the Internet community as a whole, and of course the public interest as a whole. The structural separations have created a real robust marketplace. And so how do you unroll it? The economists have kind of urged us to unroll it through, or some of the economists, of course, because they all differ, have urged us to unroll this slowly through some of the exceptions, but not to change the main model. And what concerns me as I think about some of the economic studies, as I think about GTLDs, is the exclusivity of a GTLD. We're not distributing air conditioners or vacuum cleaners, where if you don't like one, you can get another. A GTLD is actually difficult. There will be lots of GTLDs. I'm looking forward to that marketplace. But once you have a GTLD, you're really tied in to that provider. You're tied into .org or .com or .music. And the switching costs are very high. And so that exclusivity of the relationship at the top, I think, brings us back to different models where you really protect those distributing, those selling. And again, I think the structural separations have served us very, very well, and worry how we roll it back if we find out that our marketplace really is as unique as some of us think it is.
Right. Well,
okay. I'm going to let Pelage get in for one question. Tim is going to have the last word, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay. Mike Pelage, I will try to keep this 30 seconds. Kathy, as far as unwinding it, I think the Three Strikes program provides a rather clear path to how to unwind it if there are potential dangers. And again, looking into the crystal ball, when you have safeguards in place, as was demonstrated shortly after ICANN's creation, you can create competition in what once was a monopoly marketplace. Just one other point as well is you were somewhat concerned or critical about the ability to audit the proposed compliance. I would submit to you that your proposal for structural separation is actually potentially more gainable, and the requirement of Jeff Newman's control, the SEC control, there are a lot of other ways to have control and influence the market. So I think our proposal is let's put it out on a table, have some strict mechanisms, and that is a lot easier to police as opposed to a regime that has these artificial walls and other artificial complexities or market inefficiency. So again, we'll take this up on the list. Tim, hopefully you have.
Can I just respond briefly? We'll have to agree to disagree. What is easier to monitor? What is easier to police? What is easier to verify? And I think history, and I think lots and lots of other economics show us that structural separation is ultimately much easier and much cleaner to monitor and verify. Thanks.
Tim, go ahead.
Thanks, Kathy. Just a question about, or maybe a comment, I think, that as we look further at your proposal, because I know you said that, you know, there's details and things that still need to be worked out. But just in regards to the community-based GTLD, I think one of the things to consider there is that under the current draft applicant guidebook, there really isn't any. I mean, the community is actually a self-designation. So anyone can designate themselves as community, throw in some restrictions on registrations, and theoretically go through the whole process and be community. There's no required evaluation of anyone's claims of community. So if there's no contention, no objection, then, you know, the self-designation sticks and it's community TLD. So I would just encourage that, you know, if we pursue this, that some further consideration be given to that so that we have some safeguards around that so that that can't be gamed. And then maybe it's a requirement that all community claims are actually verified or go through that evaluation process or something of that nature. But I just think it's something that needs to be given some thought.
Can I respond? Tim, great
point. Go ahead.
And we agree with you completely that the community-based TLD is designed to be narrowly defined, narrowly tailored, and to the extent that it isn't, that what it purports to be is not what it's defined to be, we are absolutely with you on having this working group define it clearly so that it's not an exception that, to use Christina's words, kind of swallows up everything else. Thanks.
Okay, people, I appreciate you hanging in for an extra 5 minutes. I'm going to call the meeting closed. Great job. Thanks a million. See you in a week. Carry on the list. Great, terrific work. See you in a week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Adios.